act? Well, you are not alone. In case you haven't realized it, you have an internal GPS. It knows all you need to know about how to live your life. So it's about time you stopped letting the media and the government tell you what is true for you. In fact, it is exactly that time. It's time to think for yourself. And here to make sure you're doing just that is your host, mediator, author, and lawyer, Carol Gold.
Hi, it's Saturday evening, June the 5th, and welcome to Think for Yourself. I'm Carol Gold, and I'm glad you're here with me. I'm going to talk about racism. I'm going to talk about systemic racism, what I think it is, what I think it isn't. But I want to talk about it from a very personal perspective. And the reason is that we're seeing a lot of anti-Semitic and anti-Asian hate growing in this country. And I'm Jewish and my daughter is Asian. So I feel particularly positioned to speak about this. And I want to talk about it for me personally as a Jew and on behalf of my daughter, who I said is Asian. For me, in my lifetime, I have experienced anti-Semitism. I first experienced it when I was 12 years old and I was in overnight camp, and a bunkmate of mine who was from Florida asked me if she could part my hair and look for my horns when she learned that I was Jewish. She was also 12 years old. And when I asked her what she was talking about, she said her mother told her that if she ever met a Jew, she would know because they have horns. And of course, this fiction goes all the way back to Michelangelo's sculpture of Moses, which is an attempt to, I think, put a halo. It was a mistranslation, I believe, is how this happened, from the Aramaic or the Hebrew to Greek, where it became the word horn instead of halo, something along those lines. And so many Christians grew up believing that those horns on Moses were an indication that that's what Jews have. They have horns because Jews are of the devil. So I let her. I sat down on my lower bunk bed and I let her part my hair and look for my horns. And she was shocked when she didn't find them. We became very good friends. However, when visiting day came and her parents came up from Florida to see her and found out that her best friend in her bunk was a Jew, they took her home. And if you wonder whether or not that had an impact on me and a lasting impact, I can tell you that this is many decades later, and her name is the only name of a bunkmate I recall from my age 12 summer at overnight camp in New York. And I'm not going to say her name on the air, obviously, but I remember it as clear as a bell. So I guess one could say yes, something about that made a lasting impression upon me. Many years later, I was traveling. I was in my 20s, and I was traveling through Europe, and I was alone. I went to Spain first. I went to Palma de Mallorca, which is an island or peninsula off of Spain. And I was at a very upscale restaurant. I was about 25 years old, I think, at the time. And I was having dinner by myself. There was a band, or an orchestra, actually. And a very handsome man who was sitting by himself, probably 27, 28 years old, came across the restaurant, walked across the dance floor, and asked me to dance. And I accepted, and I got up and I walked to the middle of the dance floor with him and we danced a slow dance. And when it ended, the orchestra or the band picked up the pace and it began to be a fast dance. And as I danced, the Star of David that had been in my dress on a chain down below the neckline area of my dress bounced out. It came out of the dress as I was moving quickly, dancing fast. And he stopped dead in his tracks, looked at the Star of David, kind of laughed at me, turned around and walked off the floor and left me standing there alone. He was a German. He was of German descent. And so I've been the recipient of anti-Semitism. My daughter, who is Asian but raised as a Jew, has also been the recipient of both anti-Semitism and anti-Asian hate. when she was very little, very young. She was in first grade. We were living in rural Pennsylvania, had a farm. And she went to public school for first grade. It was a very rural school, and she was the only Asian. And after a few days of coming and going to school and coming home on the bus, she came home crying one day, and I asked her what was wrong, and she pulled her eyes back and showed me how the kids were making fun of her at school, meaning her Asian eyes. And so we took her out of that school, my ex-husband and I, and we put her in private school. We actually put her in a very upscale Christian private school where they were lovely to her and more than accommodating of our Judaism, even though she was the only Jew in the school. Later, my daughter served in the Israeli army. She volunteered. She was what's called a lone soldier. She had no relatives in Israel. She came from out of country. She came from the United States. She served 3 years as a combat search and rescue commander in the Israeli army. And while in the army, she was on one occasion the object of anti-Asian mockery by Israelis who were in a unit, not her unit, but in another unit. And she was also the recipient of anti-Asian discrimination when she was at times either in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem, where many of the Asians in that you see in Israel are Thai workers who come for menial job work. And there was an assumption that because she was Asian, she was Thai, and she was a menial labor, and she experienced that as well. But here's the thing. My experiences with anti-Semitism, my experiences with that Christian girl from Florida, didn't make me think that America was systemically racist. And my experience with that German young man on the dance floor in Palma de Mallorca, even though he was German and I could point to Nazi Germany, no, it didn't make me believe that all Germans are anti-Semitic. And my daughter, similarly, served in the Israeli army and was lauded and praised on a daily basis by other Israeli Jews who were so honored that she would come from out of country and serve. And when those children on that bus made fun of her eyes, it didn't make her grow up thinking that all rural Pennsylvania kids or all rural Pennsylvanians or all white people or all Christian people, which most of those kids were anti-Semitic. You see, it's not what happens to you, it's how you deal with it. Now, I'm not black. My Judaism isn't apparent when I walk into a room. It might be apparent once I start to speak, but it isn't visually apparent. And I can't know, therefore, what it's like to be black in America. But I can tell you I know what it's like to be a minority in America. Because the first time I went to Israel on vacation, I was flabbergasted by what it felt like to not be the minority. I remember the first Friday that I was in Jerusalem, and it was approaching sundown, which would be the Sabbath, the Shabbat, as the word is in Hebrew. And all the stores were closing, and the husbands were buying flowers to take home to their wives, and everyone was passing everyone else on the street saying, Shabbat Shalom, which means Shabbat peace. And I thought, wow. I never knew what it felt like not to be the minority until I visited Israel that first time. But it still doesn't make me, and didn't make me then, think that all Americans are anti-Semites or all Christians in a Christian nation are anti-Semite. Even though we are called a Judeo-Christian country, the United States is primarily a Christian country, Christian-based country. And I'm still a Jew in a Christian country. And yes, there's probably anti-Semitism at times that I don't even see or hear that is going on right around me. But it isn't what happens to you, right? It's how you deal with it. This accusation that the United States is systemically racist is absurd. How can a systemically racist country elect a black president? And following a black president, how can a systemically racist country elect a multiracial vice president, Kamala Harris. You can't call a country systemically racist and ignore things that have occurred that fly in the face of systemic racism. Did we have slavery? Yes. Were we ashamed of it? Yes. Did we fight a civil war over it? Yes. Did 600,000 men die on the battlefield of this country? Yes. To end it. Did we end it? Well, guess what? You can't end anti-Semitism, and you can't end anti-Asian hate, and you can't end racism of any kind through law. Because this is a condition, as I have said before many times, this is a malcondition of the human heart. And until human hearts change, until human consciousness evolves to the point where we understand our connectedness and our reliance upon one another, in the face of our unique individuality, that we were created in the image and likeness of God, but that there is a thread that runs through all of that creation that connects each and every one of us to every animate and inanimate object. We're all energy in motion, some more in motion than others. The humans more so than the buildings, but nonetheless, all energy is connected. And so this plague, because we're not suffering from a pandemic. We're suffering from a plague called accusation of racism. And the plague is also not only the accusation of racism, but the secondary plague is this movement of anti-racism, because the entire anti-racist movement is a segregationist movement. And as I spoke about it in the last show, it creates tribalism. It creates tribalism. It supports tribalism. It enhances tribalism. It encourages tribalism, whether that tribe is LGBTQ, whether that tribe are Jews or Asians or Blacks or Texans or New Yorkers or whatever it is that has happened to us as a nation that has caused us to hunker down in mindsets that don't allow us to consider anyone else's viewpoint. Look, I'm not saying that African Americans, that Black people in America don't have a legitimate grievance, don't need to be heard, don't need to know what it is to be heard from their perspective about their experience as they had it. I can tell you just the other night, I had a clash of a conversation with probably, if not my best friend, one of my best friends who's Christian. And we were having a conversation and she started to refer to the Jews of Nazi Germany. Believe me, she was getting to the context of saying that they were all contributing members of society and so they couldn't fathom what was happening under Hitler. But she began the sentence with, the Jews of Germany, they were the bankers, they were the I think she said the lawyers, that, and I stopped her dead in her tracks and I said, you can't say that to me. And she got very upset. She said, you didn't let me finish. I said, no, you can finish, but you don't know what it is to be a Jew and be described first and foremost as a person who would be in a profession that has to do with money or has to do with law or medicine, as if we're some sort of intentional takeover of cultures through certain professions. She and I went at each other for 20 minutes on the phone. When we were done, she understood what I was saying. And I apologized to her for cutting her short and not allowing her to give her context to her comment. It was an education for both of us, but that's because we were both of the same heart. That's because we both know that while we're each strong individuals and we've had different experiences in life and we may at times disagree, if we don't hear each other out, if we don't allow one another to teach the other what the other doesn't know because they haven't experienced it, then we'll never grow and we'll never be any better than we are today. And the old hatreds of the past, and the past isn't just back to Nazi Germany, it's back to Cain and Abel. Then the hatreds of the past will never be cured, and we will spend our lives in a vicious historical cycle of hatred and war and retribution, and then a calm, and then more growing hatred, more retribution, more war. So, as I end this episode, which I think is the longest podcast I've done, I hope you think for yourself, not only about what I've said, not only about systemic racism and whether or not it exists in America today, but think about the really important point, which is, it's not what happens to you. It is how you handle it. And if you want an excuse to hate an entire nation or a group of people, then you can take your experience and do that. I prefer that I and you take our negative experiences and transmute them into the highest good for all concerned. Thanks for listening. I hope you join me again on my next podcast. I'm Carol Gold, and this has been and will always be Where You Think for Yourself.
Carol thanks you for spending your valuable time with her. It is her mission to empower you to remember how smart and capable you are. Be sure to check out Carol's website, carolgold.com. That's Carol with an E, gold.com. Please leave a review and subscribe here so you'll be alerted to Carol's next podcast. Until then, above all else, remember, it's time to think for yourself.